All right. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. So let's start with good things this evening. Board?
Just a big appreciation to everyone for all the swag that we get. Of course, we're here for service to you, but it is nice, especially to see some of the work the kids do, and especially those that have fun with it and draw fun pictures of us and that kind of stuff. Thank you all for thinking of us, and we know it's been an extremely challenging year. We're not going to focus on that, but we just thank you for bearing with us, continuing to serve our kids each and every day. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'll just echo what, you can go ahead, Jen?
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to echo what Dan said. Yeah, it has been a challenging year, it's nice when things run smoothly, right? But I think the character of all of us shows what we do whenever it's difficult. And what this district has done as administrators and teachers and, of course, all of our students. I mean, look at this. I think it really shows the character of our district. And so thank you.
I'm going to keep going with that, man. This is kind of awesome to come in here and, gifts are neat, but just hearing everything from the district, especially after Christmas and, being in this position, it feels good to be appreciated for things that we do. So, but a good thing for me is Lindsay was nominated or tried out for the election thing and was the Splendor Junior High Honor Society treasurer.
Nice.
So
right.
I found that after Facebook today.
That's how I find most of my information as well.
That's how we communicate virtually. I saw the play, the Charlie Brown play on Friday, and really, I'm impressed by the kids, just the fact how they memorized all of the lines, and it was in a very quick time. They knew the music, and it was great. It would be great if it were in a huge stage that the whole community could fit into, but I understand what we're up against, and they even did it with masks, every single one of them.
Really?
Wow. Yes, they all had masks on up there. So it was fantastic, very impressive that the kids could memorize everything like they did and that they could actually stand up and perform in front of an audience, because I know I could never have done anything like that. So when kids do that, it really also, just to go along with what our kids do, the fact that they have those opportunities to do that and that they that they jump in and they're provided with those fun things that they enjoy, because there's something out there for everyone, and it's really nice to see them perform. So. Anyone else? Oh, okay, so move on. We have district recognition, so I think Dr. Burke, you wanted to say something about that tonight, since it's school board recognition.
Ma'am. You guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, okay, so just on behalf of the district, we just would like to say thank you to our school board. Most of our community has no idea of the time you guys put in, the time you spend on the phone with me, the emailing, the workshops, all the things that it takes to have a successful team of eight. So I'm missing being there with you guys. I see all the good swag. And so I'm always anxious to see what the kids' character traits of us look like. So. Hopefully I can see that when I come back. But thank you guys. It's an honor and a pleasure to serve with you. And great things are ahead for Splendor ISD. So thank you guys so much for your service.
Yeah. All right. So you feeling okay?
I got a little bit of fever right now, but I have a lot of Advil. I'm good to go.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being there here.
Absolutely.
I know it's better than a Zoom for sure, for me anyway.
Need to be on that
ivermectin.
It works.
Oh, it does, eh? Oh, goodness.
Kevin won't give me anymore. He's waiting for the
office. You've had your two doses. You got to wait a week.
What medicine did you
have? Ivermectin. That's your doctor bill.
That's horse warmer, is that?
Yeah. Oh, that's on the phone, is it?
Okay. Are you serious?
Are you hearing all of this?
Am I here with him?
Yes. What's going on?
No, he's a police officer, not a
cop. Yeah. He had one small,
All right. So we have the monthly police report. A copy of that was in the board book.
All right. I'll make it quick because I promised the girls I'd go back and watch the basketball game.
Oh.
don't remember what I said in December, so lots happened since then. We hired the other officer. He has 2 weeks left with Precinct 4. I know they would love to keep him, but sorry, he's coming back to me. He will be here in 2 weeks, and he will be at the high school starting February 1st. Then I will have a full team. Very excited about that. Budget issues up on there, still working on the Axon body camera. That's just a slow go, trying to figure out exactly what we need and how we need it. I'm applying for a grant right now. It says 2 handheld and 1 mobile. I got real energetic and I asked for 3 handheld and 2 mobile. The worst they can say is no. Might as well ask since someone else is paying for it besides Kevin. He loves it when that happens.
That's probably why he called budget issue.
Well, if I don't get it, then it'll be a budget issue.
Every no gets you closer to a yes, right? Yes, right. I mean, so we got to look at it.
General orders, I have it's like 100-something pages. I will get that to y'all probably next month. It's basically just our policies. It's nothing more than you've seen what we have, so everything's good. Productivity report, we really only had a couple of weeks in December, so the numbers are not the same as every other month, but I think every school is finally listed on there, so everybody has some productivity. Besides that, we did active shooter training yesterday. I want to thank Heath. Hopefully we cleaned up all the soap paint that we left on the wall on the floor after shooting each other. But that was a lot of fun. We had Montgomery County SO with us. We actually had the city of Splendora with us this time. So just trying to get some other agencies when they can get involved. So besides that, that's it. Everything's good. Unless y'all have something for me.
Awesome. Your new officer that you just did the pinning, all good? And
he is great. As I told y'all, he came from the construction industry. He is 54 years old. He is very energetic, though. The high schooler, the few.
What do you mean, though? I'm almost 50. What do you mean by
though? No. See, that's
you might want you to back up on that one. Yeah.
I think Jackie's energetic, too.
Yes. What do you mean by that?
He was seen around the high school. Y'all have probably seen him. He's a big muscle guy that works out all the time. So a few of the students have made comments. Man, we don't want to mess with that guy, which is good. That's good. But thank y'all. I think next month is a year for me. I've made it. Dr. Burke hasn't fired me. Y'all haven't fired me, so I'm very excited. I get to do another year, hopefully, unless after this meeting, something I don't know.
And Chief, just remind me, which campus is the new officer?
The high school.
He's at the high school. And then the new officer that starts in 2 weeks?
No, he'll be at the high school. The female, Celia, she's at Piney Woods.
Okay.
And so Terrence is at Greenleaf. Mike Bryant's at Peach Creek. High school is Tracy. Mosley's still at the junior high. Joni Adams is at Timberlakes, and Celias is at Piney Woods.
Celias is the new one. That's starting in 2 weeks.
No. Tracy no, that's, Sykes.
Okay.
Is the new
I'm
guy.
Confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
The new muscle guy is still training with Precinct 4.
Oh, that's the same. I was thinking that we were talking two different people. Okay. Thank you.
So he'll be here in 2 weeks. He's on night shift this week. I haven't really had to worry about the phone ringing in a long time on night shift, so I told him, please just, you know, be nice. I don't want to see Rowdy in the middle of the night. But that's it, and thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
All right, so we're going back to item 7 because I didn't read the audience participation portion. Excuse me. So we don't, I don't see that we have any audience participation. But I'm reading it anyway. So the participants must have signed it prior to board meeting start time. Participants may address the board in any agenda item. Participation is limited to 3 minutes to make comments to the board, unless the participant requires the use of a translator, in which case participation is limited to 6 minutes. The board will only consider complaints that remain unresolved after being addressed through proper administrative channels and when they've been placed on the agenda. Please note the Board of Trustees shall not deliberate, respond, or make decisions regarding any subject that is not included on the agenda that is posted. For further information on these requirements, contact Katie Keyes, Superintendent Secretary, at 281-689-4441. Okay, so let's skip to item B, Land and Facilities Committee update. And Mr. Wells?
All right. We had a great meeting the other night. We've identified some topics. Well, I guess we can go over this first. We've reviewed our scope of work as a committee with a little bit more focus on the facilities for the, you know, we have a lot of growth coming up, so just planning for that. moving forward, we plan to be aggressive in trying to accomplish the goals. Can you go down one, Katie? which was laid out, which is develop a master plan, remain flexible and willing to react to current and future developments, build a project bond schedule using the data from FASA and our financials, and develop a site evaluation rubric. So just our main focus, you know, trying to be strategic in every move that we make and laying this out. I think we're ready to be, like I say, like super aggressive. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to meet, I think, 3 times, and we're ready to go. We'll update y'all as we get more info.
When's the next meeting?
In a week.
January 27th.
Okay.
So we'll be at Wednesday, then the training on Thursday.
I knew you were excited after things were getting rolling, and that's great.
Yes, please do.
Yeah.
There's new development in the area?
Yeah. Is there? I heard of one.
Thank you guys for serving on that committee, because I know it's important.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything on that? I guess. All right. Then we have bond process discussion, and we have Laura here. With Stantec.
That's right. Suzanne, before Laura gets started, we did send you guys the email from Stacy Tapera, as well as the information from Joe Morrow, so that we can all have that discussion after she presents.
Okay.
If y'all so choose. Just making sure you got that.
That was what you sent today, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. Well, thank you for having us this evening, and we are going to talk a little bit. We're asked to talk about what the roadmap for bond planning looks like. And so we're going to take you through that, talk about the importance of partnership, the bond program process itself, and then timeline for success. It's not working.
Yeah. All right. You want me to just do that?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's great. That'll work. So when you're going through a bond process and that leads with a bond or ends up with a bond election, obviously partnership is really important. It's partnership with your administration, with staff, with your community, with outside entities, and all that has to come together for a successful bond election. And, you know, we would like to thank you for the long partnership that we've had with you guys in working with the district through some previous work. The next one. So you guys know me, Laura Sachleben. We were putting this slide together. I realized I've been working with you guys for 9 years, and it's all been fun. but I brought someone else with me. This is Kimberly Bowe, who is our bond strategist. She works both... in bond planning, she specializes in community engagement and really working with consensus and things of that nature. And then she also works with bond information campaigns.
It's great to see some familiar eyes that I know in the room. Right. But I have worked with a lot of communities in the state of Texas when it comes to the bond campaign portion and bond planning. And most recently worked with Willis on their 2020 bond and with Luling and Sweeney and New Braunfels. And I just really am passionate about working with communities when it comes to bonds and helping to define that strategic communication that your community needs to know about what you guys are trying to accomplish. So I'm just really happy to be here tonight and look forward to sharing the process with you just a little bit more.
Yeah, it felt silly putting our pictures on here when we were going to be in front of you, but you know, you can't.
Yeah, it's true.
The world we live in. So here's just a couple images of some of the great work that you guys have done as a district in responding to the ever-changing needs. You know, obviously Timber Lakes is one of the most recent, and then the opening of the shared park, which was a whole lot of fun. Next slide. And, you know, there's no doubt that there's significant growth. That's what you guys were just talking about. There's a lot of forces at play. You guys have a lot of undeveloped land and developers that are kind of looking in this area. That, along with other factors, are all things that you've got to look at, and none of us have a crystal ball, right? So you've got to do the best that you can to make sure that you're staying ahead of it. Next slide. And I just put this up here just as a reminder that when you're talking about bond, a lot of times people just think, oh, well, it's just about building a building, right? But there's so much that goes into that. There's you know, the enrollment. How many students do you have today? How many do you expect? What is the maintenance component that you're dealing with? Transportation, technology, there's all these things that you deal with as a district. And so it's much bigger than a lot of people think on the surface. And I think the key, and you know, this is something that I stress that's really important to remember, is you have to be way ahead of what's happening in your district, because the decisions that you're making now are going to impact kids, you know, 50 years from now. But if you just look at the timeline of how long it takes to really put together, you know, bond program, how long it takes to design, you know, the facilities, the documents for the facilities you want to do, how long it takes to construct that facility, you've got to be way ahead of that. So a lot of times districts find themselves being reactive rather than proactive, and that's when they end up with, you know, situations, temporary buildings and things that they don't necessarily want to deal with. Next slide.
So we wanted to walk you through just a little bit of the process that we found successful, a little bit of the bond program overview. Next slide. We've kind of grouped it into three main phases of a bond campaign, a bond program, and it's broken down into these three groups you see. The planning portion, which is really gathering all the information that you're going to need to kind of make some decisions and really detailing what it is you're trying to accomplish. The consensus phase, which is then sharing all that information with board members, with user groups, with the community. And then the last portion is the campaign, and that's really going out and putting that information campaign out into the community where you're answering questions, sharing that information, and really communicating with the community what it is that you guys are trying to accomplish. Next slide.
So when you start the process, the first thing that you're doing, as Kimberly said, is you're really gathering as much information as you can, right? So demographics is a piece of that. Looking at your facility condition and doing an assessment of that. You guys have done facility assessment before, and so, you know, taking a look at how that's been maintained, what kind of data you have today, can you build off of that to inform your decisions moving forward? And then there's all sorts of, you know, all these other pieces, and I'll go into a little more detail in a second. But then you want to look at your strategic plan and, you know, what are the things that you need to think about to implement that strategic plan as a district and make sure that you're taking steps towards the plan that you want. And all of that's going to come together into a facilities master plan, which you guys are already talking about. Land is a big piece of that. Next slide. And so this is just diving into more detail about each of those. You know, the demographics is looking at growth, changes in enrollments, and the implications of the facility. Utilization, I think, is an important one. You know, when I first got to work with the district, we were looking at doing an addition to the junior high, and I remember the conversation of, you know, this is how much square footage we needed, but the bond wasn't going to support that. And one of the first things we did is we did a utilization study, and we found space within that junior high and reallocated it to make it more efficient. So making sure that you're using what you have and only building what you need, right? We talked about the facility condition assessment, looking at your technology. We've all been tested with technology in the last year. And a big applause to you guys, because schools have shown huge agility in that arena. And then education specifications. Are your facilities facilitating the learning that you want to take place in your building, right? Next. And then looking at the financial side. You know, obviously there's the project cost. You have to be able to prioritize that. I will tell you that I have never worked with a school district or any client for that matter. The needs are here and the budget is here. I think we all deal with that at home also. So you have to be able to prioritize, you know, figure out your phasing, what the finances are for the district, and then it's going to come down to the bonding capacity. A lot of times that's what drives some of your decision making. And then, of course, at the heart of all this is the teaching and the learning, and making sure that, you know, the building facilitates what it is that you want to do inside your building. And if it's not, that you take that into account. This we pulled from the website and some of the strategic goals. And again, it's, being able, you know, taking all that information you have and making sure that the moves that you're making with your master plan are leading you to your strategic vision, and making sure, you know, taking a second to say, do we need to add to this? Do we need to adjust?
So as we enter the kind of consensus phase, it really is taking all that information and the findings that you have found from doing those exercises and sharing it with the board, sharing it with the community, and asking for feedback. There's a lot of feedback that the community can give you as to what a community will support or won't support. And it's just kind of helping share the information that you've learned so that as you move forward into calling a bond potentially, you have the community's support behind you. Next slide. So there's a lot of different activities that you can do to kind of get feedback from the community in terms of engagement. You can have them rank the projects. You can have them just give feedback on things that they are in support of or things that they feel that the district needs. There's multiple different ways in which you can get that information and then take that into consideration as you move forward. Next slide. And really, why is that all important? Because consensus really is critical to the success of any bond. Getting diverse groups together and really sharing the information with them so that they can ask questions and get answers, and just keeping a real transparent process going so that the community's on board with it. Next slide. What that ultimately is going to do is they're going to have foundation of facts, and they're going to become your army of advocates that are emotionally invested, and then they show up to vote. Because we all know at the end of the day, the major key and component of a bond is having people show up and vote and support it. Next slide. So the last kind of phase of this is the campaign portion where, you know, a group will come to you and make a recommendation of what we want to move forward with. The board then votes on that and the election is called. And then really you enter into that bond campaign portion where you're sharing the information with the community and sharing dates and key things about the election that your group needs to know. It's really communicating all the stuff that has happened prior. Next slide. And within an election campaign, there's a lot of different services. There's a lot of different things that we can work with you on. But ethics is a key part of that, making sure that your staff knows what they can and can't do by law once a bond is called. Answering those frequently asked questions that come up on any bond campaign for your community and for your users. And just really defining what the strategic message is. What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Because there's so many things, but to the common voter, making sure it's in a concise message that they can understand and rally behind. And again, there's multiple different things with presentation of press releases and graphics, but it is a true on-election campaign that you will have information that you push out to the public. Next slide. And depending on what your community, you know, is driving forward, it could look very different. This one for Spring Branch, they had put a campaign together during Hurricane Harvey. And so their major focus was really, you know, touching everybody in the district, and half the district, you know, had flooded houses and homes, and that wasn't the top priority. Willis, just recently with their November bond, was up against, you know, the pandemic and having a presidential election in the middle of that. A lot of people were just angry or concerned or caring about other things other than what a bond was. So we've worked with multiple different districts in kind of different times, and whatever that campaign is will be unique to you all as you move forward. Next slide. So we put together just kind of a little timeline of success as to what this bond roadmap could look like. And if you go to the next slide, you'll know, those of you that have been involved in a bond know that this is not the process. In fact, it's very different than that. But yeah, I love that graphic. It's so true if you've ever been in one. But at any rate, so that is not the process. In fact, you know, it's a lot of information that goes into it. And I know Laura has a couple of points that she wanted to make on that about past bonds and stuff like that. But as we move forward, really what we're going to do is take all that information that we've collected. We're going to put it out to the community in order for them to give you guys feedback. And then really move forward the advisory committee meetings so that they can make that recommendation to you prior to that call for election that has to happen by August. So making sure that you guys are giving yourself enough time. And right now, if you're thinking about, you know, potentially, hypothetically, a November bond, you might be thinking you've got a lot of time until November. Well, in fact, a lot of the work starts right now. It's getting all that information in hand so that you guys are able to put kind of the general plan together in order to get feedback from the community. So after that is potentially called in August, if you were thinking a November bond, then that's when a bond campaign then would start from there forward. And that's then having the next 10 weeks to actually get it out in front of the public, make sure that those that aren't registered voters have time to register to vote before the October cutoff date, that folks know when early voting is, because that's really where an election is won or lost, and then ultimately celebrating after Election Day and the bond has passed. So a lot of information, but you know, there's different phases that go into this bond campaign, and we're very familiar with walking school communities through that and just really being a partner through that process. Next slide.
So that's really all that we have. We'd love to take your questions about the process. Like Kimberly said, we kind of laid out what it could like look like to give you a sense of all those steps that have to happen, because we do a lot of times see where people get caught up in the process that is not the process because they think they have a lot of time. And then when you really sit down and you realize, especially today, in the climate that we live in, that communication to the community is so important, because it's, you know, we just live in a polarizing environment right now. So communication transparency is key. Any questions?
We appreciate that you came to you know, talk to us, you know, about it, because I think this is the start to the process, is gathering information and seeing what works, and that's, you know, Stantec has been helpful in the past with us, with working with us on the bond. So, and I know three of us were here when we passed the last one, but not all of us were, so we'll all have to be involved. So the more information we can get the earlier on, I think we're better off. Mm-hmm.
So I do have just probably two comments and maybe a question. One comment, I think, Laura, you touched on this, and it just reminded me. We had a gentleman do a training one time, and he asked us, what does the year, and I'm going to use this year, but what does the year 2033 look like for you? Like, what does 2033 mean to you? Well, the year 2033 is the year that this year's kindergartners are going to graduate. So the decisions that we're making right now about these bonds and about facilities and land acquisitions and all this other stuff is going to impact today's kindergartners years to come. And it's just so critical to know and have that strategic plan and so forth. One thing that kind of bit us last time, and I just think it's something that we keep on the forefront and not, we just can't let it not be significant, is that in the last process, and I'm probably getting too much in the weeds at this moment, but the board wasn't highly involved in a lot of the earlier community conversations. Mm-hmm. And then when it came down to it, the board made different decisions, and it was an irritation for the community more than it was a help. And that bond passed by 9 votes. Mm-hmm. So we will have to be very focused and intentional and make sure that, you know, transparency, of course, and I don't think it was not because we weren't wanting to be transparent. I think it's because we came in, we had different ideas, and we weren't part of the conversations with the community, and then when something else was taken out for a vote, it was not what the community had really recommended. So just something that we have to be extremely
yes.
conscious of this yes. time. 9 votes was pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I will say, you know, one of the very first thing we had on the process and the schedule was formulating what the plan for the plan is, and that means identifying who is engaged in the process and when. And, you know, that last bond was a different approach, right? And
well, we were on the reactive side because
right.
of the additional funding
right.
that year. And
right.
so, yeah, we were that do it while crying. Without a doubt.
Yeah, that was
were
like
we not, Kevin?
Meeting, wasn't it?
Saturday spending in that room.
Yes.
I mean, yeah,
yes.
we were there. So.
And those things happen, right? But yes, I totally agree that making sure that you plan for the engagement that you need, and not only bring to the table your supporters, but bring to the table the people that you think may not be supporters, because those are the people that you've got. A lot of times it's because they don't have the information,
right?
They're reacting to something else, and they're making their own narrative.
Yeah. Folks will buy what they want, and that's just a consumer thing, you know, that we all know with marketing. And so I do think it's just really important in that consensus stage, is letting people ask the questions, bring up anything that they're unhappy about, and then have a general agreement to move forward. And that involves you all and the community.
Yeah, and that's where we had a lapse last time. So.
I think that we need to take a different approach than last time.
I 100% agree.
Between board and administration, we should establish what are we going after.
Yes.
And then bring in and listen. And at that point, listen to the community mm-hmm. to say, you know, to let it pick it apart, you know. Mm-hmm. Are there things that we missed? By all means, we want to respond to that. Mm-hmm. But last time, we let the community make a plan, and the board didn't weigh in. And then at the end, the board made their own plan, and that's where a lot of that, I think that's what you're describing. Too. I think
yeah. I see nine votes was really tough.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
And that's exactly, and I still hear on occasion, you know, there were some very well-known community members that were angry.
Yes.
They were angry. And so now we're here we are, you know, how many years? Y'all saw, it's been like 5 years already, which mm-hmm. blows me away. But those people are going to remember that. And so we've got to really regain that trust as well. So, and not that it was intentional or that there was no, there wasn't a lack of transparency. It was just the direction, the approach wasn't the best. That's all.
Right.
Inspecting it.
And I know it's hard to see on the process schedule that we kind of have put together, but that's having that kind of what I like to call the bumper wheels, the bumper group together, the advisory group that's kind of meeting before those community meetings just to make sure that the general direction is being communicated and there's a general plan, and then you're getting input from the community on the variables,
right.
A, B, or C, not on the entire what would you like to see, because we all know people's opinions vastly different and differ. So I think that would be something very important just to keep in mind as we move forward.
Well, I appreciate that you've worked with some smaller districts, right? So you can see some of the challenges
mm-hmm.
we face. And I think one of y'all said it best with the foundation of fact. You know, that's going to be one of the most important things we can do. And every move that we make being strategic. And that'll be very helpful. So I look forward to working on this. I'm assuming.
What's one of the shortest time frames that y'all have working?
Maybe the positive, the best shortest one, not the worst shortest
one. Well,
that's
a good question. I'll kick it to you on that one.
You always want the process to be authentic. You don't want it to be something that you're just checking the boxes. So to say that we've had a bond that have, you know, started the process in February and gone for May and been successful, yes, we've had that happen, so a few months. But that's because they already had a ton of work already put in. When it comes to the community meetings, you know, if you have a meeting every day of the week and then you check the box and you've got, you know, your input, that doesn't feel as great as if it was a process that you're meeting maybe once a month. So, you know, I would say the answer is you can have success with any time frame as long as you have your folks that are involved, hands-on and involved 100%. But the fact of the matter is everybody has home life, everybody has work life, and they can't give 100% of their time all the time. So as long as there's a plan in place, you guys have your information, you can run. And you can get the message out to the community. You just want to make sure that you have that investment from the community and have met with them to uncover any stones that need uncovering.
Yeah. And that was a sample. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that every schedule, every process looks a little bit different because it's customized to what you've got, you know, the work that you've done. How many times you need to engage your community, that is always different. But you guys have done a lot of the work also. So, you know, we did a very in-depth facility assessment for the last bond. And I walked, I think, every campus. and so you can build off of that because you have done that. Whereas if you were starting from scratch, that itself can take a long time if you're really going to dive in. And then, of course, you know, demographics information, that kind of thing. It has its own timeline.
It has to be updated.
You spoke directly to what I think, because from my perspective, this isn't a new plan. This is a continuation. Now, are we changing the timeline? Yes, because our initial plan when we passed the last bond was 2 years from now to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
But as y'all know, and that's anybody in the room and anybody in the community knows, the development we anticipated the development to start on one side of town or maybe on the other side of town. We didn't anticipate it to start on every side of town at the same time. And that's what we're dealing with at this point. I mean, so it's a lot. And, you know, I've had community members ask me straight up, what are y'all going to do? You know, so,
yeah.
And, you know, I let them know right off the bat, hey, we're looking at speeding up our timeline because we don't want to be like our neighbors that are having to, you know, to purchase hundreds of portables, you know. And
yes.
I don't foresee us in that situation at, you know, even worst case scenario yet, but just in our facilities meeting, we said, we looked and we had like 1,000 student capacity right now. We have that many seats. And that sounds great. Until
except
you
for there's 8,000 homes going across.
Houses are being built and calculate and really hang on, and it's going to take 2 years to build a school after we pass the law. And then you realize that capacity is chewed up in a hurry, and you're, you know, we're not sitting with in as great a position as we thought we would were. You know, so.
Yeah. Well, and we also have to look at doing it right because we know we have to turn around and do it again pretty quickly. So if we do rush it, or if we don't get enough the community on board, then, and we have a bond that doesn't pass, then we're constantly fighting that too. So I think that's why it's a good thing that we're gathering the information.
And the numbers don't lie. I mean, I'm a numbers guy. I know that interest rates are at all time lows. I mean, and that's an easy thing to tell the community. Look, we'll never get this kind of bonding capacity. Well, we know it's never happened before to have this low of interest rates. So,
if
we want to get the best bang for our buck, it's best to do it when the interest rates are low.
Yeah, and if some of you guys will remember that one of the biggest challenges of the last one was the bonding capacity, and you know, the demographics and the maintenance, all that was telling one story, but we had to figure out how do we prioritize, you know, to make the best decision for today, knowing, you know, that we're going to have to keep building the plan later. So that piece is really important in terms of when you go and what you decide to do, because you also want to be careful not to exhaust your community by going out too frequently, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's what do they have the appetite to support, and you know, what is your financial outlook?
And you need to set yourself up for success, too, because we know that this is going to be something that you're going to have to turn around and go back out for. So you want people to have a positive experience, and everything you say you're going to do gets delivered, and there's updates, and that you guys are communicating with the community so they know what's going on. Because I think, as one of you said, if you stub your toe, it's going to be a harder battle than the next time you turn around for a bond campaign. And you guys have you know, a good history of support within the community of your past 5 bonds since 1990 or something like that. But last time was really close.
Yeah.
I do think that we're in a better position as well because we're, it's been 5 years, which is insane. But also, you know, last time we had just done the TRE. Mm-hmm. So we were just kind of like 2 years off of the TRE, and it felt close.
Yes.
And so I do think we are in a better place today than we were. And then there's evidence of it. Like you said, Dan, I mean,
that's the biggest thing.
I don't think we have to say anything. Drive down 2090. I think that, there you go, you know. Oh,
and
gosh, I just, the whole thought of a bond, though, I just, somebody bring volume to every meeting.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yes, said no one ever.
Yeah. Yikes. I don't know. Any other questions she calls? Jason?
I guess it's overwhelming right now.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yes,
I think
it is a lot.
And sometimes I think you have to hear it a couple of times, you know.
Yeah.
Right now my ears are smoking and my eyes are big, just kind of like, you know, it's one of those things for me. I mean, we can sit in here and talk about it, but there's so many,
yes.
It's almost, you know, you're at that jittery stage where you're thinking about this and all of a sudden you're thinking, is this the right move right now? I mean, because if you don't do it now, we're going to be, as the saying goes, behind the eight ball 2 years from now, because we're going to have 600 right across the street, you know, and just sitting here, being in all these discussions for 3 years of East Campus and, you know, not getting that thing modernized and having to move everything to the east side, and then your worries are, because we got everything coming on the west side, that east side is going to be left behind and still be outdated. So, I mean, there's just, again, it's like...
overwhelming.
I had hair before I came in here.
That's not true. Yeah.
Can't convince anybody of that one, my friend.
Well, thank you all so much for shedding light on what's the beginning of our discussion, and that helps a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Burke, did you want to talk about the information on PASA a little bit more? Or?
Yeah, so just as a reference to, the discussion that was happening after, Lauren Kimberly presented. Thank you all, Josh Delmer, I appreciate that. You guys saw the email from Stacy to pair up with PASA, talking about the difficulty of pulling together a demographic study and how to make adequate recommendations to the committee so they can make recommendations for the bond if we recall it November 21. And so I know there's the interest rate piece that we have to consider. We initially had met with PASA last fall and had targeted November of 22 as our date. And I think we can agree that, we need to look at moving that up. I mean, just going on the information that Stacy sent, I want Kevin to talk about what Joe Morrow had sent as well. I think in terms of having a quality process, a process that is not rushed, I mean, it would be my recommendation at this point. I know we're not making a decision tonight. There's still more discussion to be had that we shoot for May of 22. Now, I know that, but the bond market interest rate is not guaranteed, Dan, to your point. But I do think we need to consider the process. And I think we have good community trust right now. I think we need to build on that. And I think a good, solid process where we have buy-in input. And I know, Jackie, to your point about the board not being involved during the last bond election, I wasn't here for that. But I can assure you that we will do everything we can to involve everyone that we can in that process. And I feel like just to rush this, I would be very nervous about that. So when I say rush it and call it November 21, because that would put us behind the eight ball. I mean, could we do it? Yes. But I think we need to consider the process and then the financial impact of that as well.
Dr. Burke, we don't have yet a full strategic plan, correct? Because that's one of the things when Kimberly and Laura were speaking a minute ago, I mean, that's critical to have that in advance. I mean, it's a building block, and we still don't have that yet, right?
That's what part of what we're developing is master plan for that.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of pieces that would require that. We're also going to be talking about a tracking tool later that shows the measurables for that too. So I would say we have a large part of the strategic plan done, yes.
Well, and to answer, part of your point about the PASA study, that when we talked to John Hunterreiner, and basically we can collect the data and know how many lots we have that are on the ground, that are ready to go. And at this point, we can go talk to the five developments and say, what's your plan moving forward? Because they're not waiting for us. They know how many lots they plan to deliver in 6 months. And they know how many lots they plan to deliver in 12 months. And there's going to be a home on each of those lots basically about 4 to 5 months later. So I think we can get, at this point, we have real-time data. It's not necessarily looking how many's coming 3 years from now. It's how many's coming in the next 2 years. I mean, so I don't know that, I guess that's why I'm not reluctant. That's why I'm reluctant to want to wait for PASA when we have real-time data that we can see. The other concern with waiting, and this is because I seen the thing with Joe Morrow, and I guess the question I had on him, because Joe Morrow has always told us to maximize our bonding capacity, we have to make one payment in the biennium prior. So if we don't go November and we wait till the following year, we have to pay the note for 18 months with no, basically with no state assistance. So that's why Joe has always recommended get that payment in December, and then you qualify for the next, from now on, you qualify. And if you hit it just right, you make one payment you know, and you qualify all of your debt for the state match. If you miss that date, anything you move beyond that, then you've got to wait all the way to that 2-year mark again before you get to that funding. So.
I thought that was just that 1 year. You're talking about every?
Yes, every. The EDA and the IFA funding is like that. Each biennium.
Because the EDA funding, you need to make a payment on your bond, which is August in the last year of the biennium.
Right. And we're in the last year now.
Well, if you
no, we would be in the last year next year. So if we passed it in November, we would make the first payment in August.
And that would depend on when you sell your bonds.
Yeah, and that can be.
You may pass them in November, and you may not sell them for another 18 months. It would just all would go along in your cycle of your strategic plan.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know how to put a number on that value, I guess. Right.
So I wonder if we need a kind of a pro-con thing to look at that, to say if we did it this way, what would the result be money-wise, and if we did it this way? Well, I think
that,
for
that information he sent you has the two different, but I don't think it's specific to the two Novembers, 21s and 22s. It doesn't have a specific to the May, but we can do that. And again, that was preliminary information just to get this conversation started. Joe would be glad to come and be more specific and also be here to answer questions as well.
Yeah, that was the email sent today, right?
Yeah. But I don't even think it included that about the payment. I mean, it included your two different models.
I never saw like a hard number, like what does it cost for holding, or what does it cost, you know, what do you save by going earlier? You know,
I didn't see that either. I just saw the two.
And the average community member, I think we need to kind of make it in a way that is, you know, something that we, if we're going to work on this anyway, I think we're going to have a couple of presentations and all of those things. If we can break it down and make it very simple. Why are we doing it now versus later, or later versus, you know,
right.
if you're really thinking that, I definitely don't feel comfortable making any kind of a decision until all the information comes in. I feel pretty solid about
that.
That
was
so,
intent, at least as far as I'm
sure,
understand
yes.
for tonight, is just to kind of
yes.
get these kind of conversations started.
Yeah, yeah, because otherwise it feels rushed, and I think it's good to gather the information and then make it in a way that people can understand.
Would this require any special meetings between now and then?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if we're really honestly thinking about November, we can't go March trying to see what we're going to do in November. I mean, like I said, it's...
I mean, if we're going to deal with November, we have to call the bond in August, so that means it's already almost February. So that means February, March, April, May, June, July. That's it. I mean, we've got to hustle if that's what we want to do. So we're going to have Joe get us that information really quickly. And then I'll have to talk to Stacy to see if we want to move forward with a demographic study, which I recommend we do, then we need to see if they can pull that off.
Yeah, because I think the demographic study, I mean, I think it would still be good. And really, in the time frame she's saying, by the time we're calling the election, she would have it back in. So,
there wouldn't really be enough time. What she's saying, I think, is the important part, is there wouldn't be a lot of time to present that to the committee to make that recommendation. It takes about 4 months for them to do an in-depth study.
Yeah.
I can revisit that. But we probably can't wait until the next regular board meeting to make this decision. I mean, we've got to get moving.
We've got the meeting on the 28th, but that's already, we're decided what we're talking about then. Okay.
Well, we can send you guys a lot of information, but you know, there's just a lot that has to happen. So,
I guess
would it be possible to do like a SWOT analysis, some sort of, you know, here's the strengths and weaknesses of going this manner and or not,
yeah,
and so forth.
Nice.
It'd be good to kind of see that. You know, kind of in a visual, this is what you've got with different options.
That's what I was thinking, the pros and cons of each. Or SWOT analysis.
So I guess my thing is outside of the financial benefit, the potential financial benefit, what would be the point, I guess, and obviously pushing construction back 6 months, you know, that's what I'm thinking. So we can do that, Jack.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, again, just some sort of, even if it's not that that model, but some sort of visual to be able to have a comparative sight into it. Yeah. Okay, look. All right.
I mean, I can have that. Ken and I can start working on that this week and next.
I guess, what is the biggest question that we have as a board?
Well, my concern is, I mean, I'm with Dr. Burke on rushing it. I'm anxious about that. So I would really like to see what are we rushing it? You know, what if we laid it out? Use Kim and Laura's timeline. You know, if we laid it out, is it rushing it? Can we do these things? Is it possible to get the TASA study, the strategic plan? Because I know we've got building blocks of it, but we don't have it. That's kind of why I asked that question. I'm like, I don't know that we really are ready to have an intelligent conversation. I mean, or would it just be, yeah, well, you see it, and I know I agree with that. Well, you see it, but we got to have a lot of data to support that, and we don't even know what kind of numbers are we looking at, right? Like, are we going for the max? Are we going, you know? I mean, what would we? You see what I'm saying? There's so much to do still, and so I think it would be beneficial to have Kevin and Dr. Burke put something together. And then us have a special meeting, because if we are going to, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, because the interest rates are at an all-time low, and we are going to be behind the eight ball, as you say, if we don't do something pretty quick. So I don't disagree. I just want to see it all, and I kind of want to see a comparative view, and I think a special meeting is going to be required, without a doubt.
I think that's where my thing is, too. It's the move. If there's an opportunity, and we have to seize it in November, we can't wait to say, hey, we're going to plan on doing this. If you're asking, like, right now, just discuss that we're happening now, I'm the May person. But what are the absolute pros and information that we need to know if November is the time, or if it's 2022 is even the time if it isn't May? I just, you know, it's like, don't seize the opportunity and not make a decision now. That's going to affect if we have to make that decision for November. But don't be planning on making that decision before November, because there's too many. It's a workload on the team, on the team here to get all that stuff ready to say, hey, let's go do this in November, or are we going to be even more better planned in May?
What specifically? Because the only question I have is the dollars, right? How much does it cost us? What can we get? What kind of rate? What's the bet? What kind of money? What kind of school can we build if we go in November versus waiting? What does it cost to wait? That's what I want to know.
That's what I want to see.
That's
too.
My thing is only a financial piece.
It was the benefit.
So, well, it's, you know, the other thing too is if it isn't laid out, if it isn't laid out right, and we have that rush, and we don't pass it in November, then we're really behind where we should have waited to May to get the information.
No, not really, because then you just build on that. I mean, you just take what you have and you keep. But I'm with you. You don't decide you're going to have a big Christmas party in December and you got to still build a house, right? You know, you kind of got to. You don't want to wait until October to start laying the foundation. Yeah, I mean, so.
Well, and I'd rather have all information versus just part of the information. And I think I agree with finances, but I think it's a bigger, you know, like you said, Al, it's bigger than that. I think
So just going back to Dan's, though, and I agree, I don't disagree, but again, you don't have to build. We didn't build right away with this last one, right? But we pushed that bond because we were getting that state funding, and we knew the value. What was it, $7 million extra, essentially? We knew we had to push right then whether we did anything with it that year or not, and we didn't, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can see that point, too. If we can get the data and we can benefit from the greater capacity or the greater bond because of the interest rates, then let's try to do what we can do. Let's not just hold on.
I don't remember the numbers specifically, but that's what got the last time when this came up. I don't even remember. It was a couple months back. So I went home and started running numbers, interest rates, and realized if you get 3% versus 5%, look at how much more building you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The state funds us by our annual payments. They don't care if you pay interest or principal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're paying
right.
a fraction
right.
of your note.
You can keep pay all the interest you want.
That's right. And so for me, it was simple. Look, if we move now, it was like a $5 million difference, I want to say. I mean, mm-hmm. So, waiting, for what? You're going to pay the same tax? I don't see the benefit
of waiting. But we want it to pass. I think that's, if we present it and it doesn't pass, then rushing it affects the passing of the bond, then I'm not for that, because that's the outcome we want more than, you don't want to have it and then have it not pass.
So no one wants to be in the same position that Conroe was in when they had this huge bond, they had to go back and then pare it down. I get that, but the growth is coming, we all know that, and so getting brick and mortar on the ground as quickly as possible, granted with the financial side of it, you know, to be considered, I think should be our utmost goal. And so is 6 months going to make a difference in the interest rates? Of course, we don't know. We'll never know that. But is it going to make a difference in, like you said, the bonding capacity? Is it, because the numbers I saw,
state funding,
what, 64 mm-hmm. million versus 51 million, something like $13 million difference in the numbers.
But that was one of that, right, raising taxes.
So that's a very good question. But I mean, is how big of a difference is 6 months gonna make?
Well, I think
I'm in favor of getting those on the ground as quickly as possible, because there's, what is it, Jeff, 5,000 rooftops going in the next 10 years?
8,000.
Multiply that by 2 at least.
Okay. Well, there you go.
10,000.
And so, at least now we're 1,000 students ahead of where we need to be in the elementary schools, because luckily we got PWE on the ground, or TLE on the ground. We need to stay there. And with all of the influx of all of these rooftops and all of the tax base that's coming in, we'll be able to get that future bonding capacity, because they're going to be here.
Yeah. Well, and the key, will 6 months, what difference does 6 months make? Maybe that's the question you want to answer.
And how quickly
what difference does 6 months make? And I'd like the answer to that question.
Yes, quickly.
So
Dr. Bark, is that your next action step, is to put together that comparison and to Dan's point, what are our concerns, the financials, what does that 6 months difference look like, what does that look like with the state making a payment, you know, what are the gains versus the losses?
In the document, Joe said, and again, sorry we got it out to you just today, but the financial gains and losses are going to be fairly negligible on 6 months. Scenario. Okay. He lists the 12-month scenario in there and shows the differences. I think the biggest concern is whether or not you can adequately plan to pass a bond the first time around. And that's, I think that needs to be the biggest question. Of course, that's just me.
You know what? We're talking about a May otherwise? Because I thought you can't do May bonds anymore. I thought.
Don't believe that passed. That was a push, and we're going to see it again.
Okay.
They want everything to go on.
November
election, which that's another bust to get off the November election.
Yeah, I would much rather go on an off-cycle election, which this year November would be an off-cycle election. So you got, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking if we were going to be thinking 6 months and going in May, I was thinking that that had passed, that you couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah, Joe's showing that there's, that goes against everything Joe's always told us about, get that payment in and that election, you know.
The last year of the biennium, yeah.
Okay. So, still gathering information. Any other comments? All right, let's move on from money to people. And next we have the leadership and culture update, Dr. Barnes.
All right. All right, thank you guys for your time this evening.
Thank you. You were so quiet, too. We didn't even hear you.
You're working outside, crap. All right, so Dr. Berg asked me to give an update to some of the work we've been doing the first semester. And so that's what we're going to begin at this evening. And I think we just got my switch.
I'm not sure if it'll work. You can try it.
All right, so in teaching leadership, I'm sorry, leadership and culture. Teaching leadership, I guess maybe it's kind of been working together a lot this first semester. Just some of the projects you guys have asked for. We're working on social media accounts as related to, you know, we have just additional accounts, CTE. So we got that kind of settled. student fees, so that we're going to have an issue, some information about that this evening. The goal is for every February 1st to have the student fees for the upcoming school year updated and ready for you guys. And so at the February board meeting, you have those student fees. And then at the March board meeting, you can vote on if you approve those. So that's, we're going to continue working on that piece. Student participation, extracurricular activities, so that's a work in progress as we're doing course selection. So we should have that information for you. That'll come more in May. And then the campus booster club, support programs. We worked on a checklist that the principals have to make sure that we're in compliance with board policy as it relates to those school board projects. Campus progress presentations, one of my favorite parts of the semester. And so what basically occurs is the campus principals present to us some of the wonderful things they have going on their campuses. Each campus does it individually. We do it in an 8-week cycle, which kind of gives us some information right before we get to the 9 weeks and let the principals if there's anything that they want to focus on over before the 9 weeks ends. Some of the areas of focus, the good things that are going on their campus, of course, what professional developments they're working on, their campus goals, initiatives, and how they're monitoring those, their performance data, capture kids' hearts piece, some more academic data, attendance, and discipline. And we have just a sample of one. I'll just kind of show you. Ms. Katie, if you click on Peach Creek. They volunteered. And so, and they come in, they present. They present to the superintendents, and they kind of go through it. We ask questions. They present questions. If there are some problems, we try to identify some solutions. But it's a great way for us to get some in-depth knowledge of things that are going on campuses so we can help and assist them in that process. And they do those every 8 weeks. They've been doing a great job with that piece.
Sorry, I have a glare.
All right, Exceptional Leaders Academy, we've been working through that. Exceptional Leaders 1 and 2. So 1 is our first year of participants, and 2 is the second year folks who've been through 1, and they're more focused on, so very specific. It's a smaller group, but our goals there are to enhance our district capacity. So as we're growing, to grow some people within our district, take those new positions that are developing, increasing transparency in the district processes, just make sure they are aware of how things work at the administrative levels, on their campuses, or within the district, and then to work on, be sure to strengthen their leadership skills so when those opportunities do come, that they are ready. So it's a smooth transition into those positions. I work with some great principals. There are 6 wonderful principals in this district. We do a lot of things together. Principal walks is something we started. We'll have our next set Friday at Timber Lakes Elementary. This is a great opportunity. As a part of our meeting process, we get to go out and visit some camps, some classrooms, and then we get a chance to come back and evaluate what we saw. And we try to find a high-performing classroom and one that maybe has some opportunities with it. And so it's really great for principals to share that information. And we do it from campus to campus. So I think we've done a few. We missed junior high, but we'll come back and get those. The TPES, an effective schools framework, is what our evaluation piece is based on. The big piece of that is the principals and myself, we worked on some campus goals for them. And so what we did, we had a monitoring piece last week. I think we have one more. We have to do a young lady who was not here on last week. But basically, they set a goal, a professional goal, how I want to grow this year. We identified some artifacts, like what are you going to collect to identify that you've met that goal? And then what is a campus goal that you have as a principal? And so we work on that as part of their evaluation piece. We do principal coaching. And also Dr. Cozy helps out with that piece. The community-based accountability systems is something else that we work on. The campus has met with John Tanner individually to strengthen their process as they're going into the spring. We work on campus dashboards, and this is about a 3-week process. These are some dashboards I've built for each of the campuses. And just take a click on one. Well, she doesn't have access. I'm sorry about that.
I didn't either.
I didn't either.
Like everybody had
she is. So what we try to do is we try to follow our progress report cycle. So we look at it 3 weeks, 6 weeks, and then 9 weeks. And so we look at the big parts of the campus, attendance, discipline, past failures, just those big pieces. And so what does it look like at 3 weeks? Now, there are some areas that we can work on. So So we're like it's 6 weeks, and so what you will see is that as it goes through the 9-week cycle, things get better on each of the campuses. And it's a great way for them to monitor the system that they have going on. So that's been working really well as well. And we talked about evaluation systems as it relates to their T-test, and then being data-driven is one of the things that we're focusing on. And just to make sure that we have we're giving true accountability to what the students are doing. So we don't want it to be how we necessarily feel all the time. Everything's going great. We try to put some numbers or some data with it so that we can make sure that we're making good decisions. Assistant principal meetings or workshops. So we are working with assistant principals. We have a meeting this week on Thursday after school. They've been doing a great job of coming to those meetings. And some of the things that we worked on, in this picture, we had Chief present. We talked about how the police department and the assistant principal interact and what is their roles. We did school of law. That's the book that study that they have. It's the Excellence in Every Classroom. We'll be taking pieces of that as we build those systems for the campuses. This upcoming meeting, we're looking at discipline and how we talk about it. And so to make sure that each classroom, the teachers, like when we say misbehavior, to make sure we have a true definition. So every teacher, when they identify as misbehavior, it's the same thing on your campus. So each campus is doing their own. And so we're going to update that on our next meeting. Our first responder list, or just who on campus we need to contact, who's that first person, like if it's a registration, who's the first person to deal with registration, who would be your backup for registration, so on and so forth. And we did that with each one of the areas on campus. And then, of course, scheduling and time management. Just trying to make sure that all the things that you have to do as an assistant principal, that we can put those on schedule to make sure that they're occurring every week. The Leadership and Culture newsletter. So with the help of some wonderful folks in the district, I've shared this out, hopefully, most times on a Sunday evening, but sometimes I'll wait till the first day of the week. And basically it has some of those just different areas of growth for us. So I try to identify classrooms of the week, which makes sure that I get out and see some of the things that are going on in the campuses. So we try to identify some campuses, some great things are going on. The top left-hand corner is a report, CTE, fine arts we've included, the counseling center, and teaching and learning. We have important dates. The second column on the column on the left, the second section, are articles. So I try to find articles that can help us grow, and I share the information there. I've added in podcasts as I've grown in my technology wisdom. And so and everything that we try to do is always based around educational leadership. So those podcasts are from educational leaders, and they're sharing information. And we have a goal, a quote for the week. We had a technology piece in. Mr. Valley helps out with that. What is some technology that we can use to make our productivity increase? And then I give the principal some information on staff attendance, student attendance, and just kind of additional referrals. So just kind of that cultural piece to make sure that those systems that kind of give us some hints about how things are going, how they are on campus. And I send out send out every week for their information as well. We focus on capturing kids' hearts as well, as part of the culture piece of the work that I do. Upcoming for this semester, on item 3, we have a recharge. It's going to happen on 2 campuses. It'll be a full recharge. And we're going to have some campus traction packages kind of going, where they're going to come in and help the campuses look at how their systems are working in terms of capturing kids' hearts and what are some areas we can work on and things that we can work to improve. And the focus areas for that are the good things, greetings at the door, classroom ambassadors, social contracts, and forward questions. And as I'm getting a chance to do my campus culture walks, I get to see those items as they happen on the campus and can report that information back out to the principals. Mm-hmm. Student mentoring is something that I started up as well. It's kind of starting slow, but we're moving on. This picture here is David. David's a young man. He graduated from Shepherd last year. I had David as a middle school principal. And so I got a call last year. David wanted me to come to an end of the year ceremony that Shepherd has that says there's someone who made an impact on your life. And so I was really surprised because, you know, I was like, why does David want me? He's a new principal and all. But David identified, he said, just the little times that we spent talking in the hallway, just about, you know, how you're doing, how things are going, it meant a lot to him. And so with that, what I started doing was trying to find challenging students to work with. And so kids were having severe behavior issues, attendance issues, you know, issues with grades. Try to spend some time, so I build some time in my schedule to spend an hour or so with them every week. So far I have a high school kid now, and I have an elementary kid who's been on COVID, so got sick before I could reach him. And when he gets back on campus, we'll work with him. But we work on goal setting. You know, what are some of their action plans? You know, what are some things they can do to make things better for them at campus? So that's a really good part of my week as well. And then just systems. One thing Dr. Berg asked me to look at as I came into the district was how our systems are working and what are some ways we can strengthen some of the systems that we have in place to make sure that they are strong, to make sure they're accessible, to make sure they're clear. So those things, as we're growing as a district and we go from having 4,000 to 8,000 kids, we're not trying to build those or to rebuild them. Those things are in place and they're just kind of growing with our systems. So I spent a lot of time as well working on those. And professional growth, those are some opportunities that I've taken myself to grow. It's a new position for me. And so one of my biggest challenges, and I'll be honest, and I told the principals this, I'm not sure they always believe me. One, I have a problem. My wife says I am very hard-headed, and I get something in my mind, and it blends way out of highway. And so I try not to do that. I also try to not tell them how to run a campus, because they know how to run a campus. And so I have to be very mindful that you're not the principal no more, Glenn. You have to support principals. And so that's something I've been working on. So the professional growth that I have with me, it's helped me to help them. And so I try to grow myself to help them grow in their capacity so that our campus just gets stronger and stronger and we become the destination district that we are on the road to be. And then our spring plans, we're working in staffing. We're working on campus and department budgets, teacher onboarding process, campus leadership, professional development, we're going to continue that process on. We just completed most of our mid-year evaluations with our principals and directors. I have a few more to do this week, and then we'll do it again at the end of the year. And then the transition to what I call the post-COVID processes and procedures. And what I mean by that is that COVID is not going to go away anytime soon. It is a major, major, major event that really impacts people in some really rough ways. But what we have to do, because our job is so important, is how do we get past that? And so my new analogy is that COVID is like this huge pothole in the road. And the first time, man, you hit it, and you don't realize it's there, and I mean, but it causes major damage to your car, right? And so some cars just can't come back from it. But what we have to do in the spring, because the work we do with our kids is so strong, is realize that pothole is there, but how are we going to get around it? Do we take another route? Do we just pick our time and go through it? And so that's one of my big challenges, how to take our campuses in this spring semester to getting back to some sense of normalcy so that we can truly focus on our kids 100% of the time and make sure that they are meeting those goals that we want for them so they can be the successful people that we want. And so that's what I mean by transition post-COVID. So COVID is not gone. We ain't got our vaccines yet. I did see an online spot. I might try to buy one. Test out on my son first, see how it goes. I think you got that cell, man. I got some ivermectin in that house. I got some ivermectin. If I can answer any questions or anything for you guys, I'll be more than happy to.
Dr. Barnes?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if you, I mean, because you're presenting on the process and all, and by the way, this is fantastic. Love the mentorship, all of this. And what a perfect time for you to be doing process diagrams with COVID, right?
Yeah.
But I did have a question, and I don't know if you can answer, if it belongs in here, but based on the dashboarding and all that, do we have any data back yet about the kids that came back on campus after in the second semester? And is that even something that you would have, or is that something that maybe Dr. Burke can talk about later?
Like the number.
I was just thinking when you were talking about your dashboards and maybe I'm taking what you're doing, but looking for the data.
To see if they're doing a better job since they've been back on campus versus being
How did it go? Do we have them? We have them back, right?
Yeah, we have most of the kids back. We still have a small percentage who are out. Some for health reasons. Some who are just being real successful with the online environment. So those kids are still doing that. And so I guess if you look at it in that sense, the kids who were online, they were, you know, things are going well with attendance, things are going well in their classes, and those kids are still there. And so that is working for them. Those kids who were not are back, and I think we now have about maybe 200 kids who are still out out of 4,200 kids.
Yeah,
and so
fantastic.
For the majority of kids, you know, online, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Online learning is difficult. All right, it is not for everybody. And I think that a lot of kids tried it, parents tried it, thought it would be the best thing for the situation. So some for health reasons you need to stay, but for a lot of kids, it's just not what they've been used to. You know, it's even harder when you go to college. You got those online classes, but you're going to work during the day and try to make time for it. But we haven't given up on that process. Dr. Grace and her team are really working on keeping a hybrid model in place for those kids who are being successful. So we do have some who it has worked for. We do have some where it's not working as well. In terms of COVID impacting kids, the elementary principals in particular done a great job of identifying like our kindergartners and first graders and like the where they should be at this time of year and where COVID, because of the delay in school and the spring semester, has set them back, and they have really put some great plans in place to catch those kids up. And so they've been doing a great job with that. So those dashboards are helping, I hope.
That's where I was just going to go is, I mean, that's fantastic to be able to identify. Now you have the data, right? Because, I mean, we have fantastic personnel that can address it, but you got to have the data to know what you're addressing. Yes, so
they're doing a great job with that, pulling that data and looking at the kids. They look at it even closer than I do, because I'm kind of just a campus-wide picture, but they look at it by kids and my classrooms and making those adjustments. And that's why we try to do it every 3 weeks or so to make, you know, how things are going before we get to the end of the 9 weeks.
The question I had was about the student fees and coming back to us in March. Is that in the same time frame as the budgeting?
Be close.
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be on time. Just prior. Okay.
I think he was going to bring it in February, though, right? I think so. It'd actually be better than that.
Yeah, those extracurricular fees, I want to give it to you. Yeah. So our goal is every year, if they have it to me at February 1st, then I can share the information with you guys in February and gives you a month or so to look at it and come think about it and ask questions. And then you can vote on it in March if you accept those fees or not.
And my point being with it being coinciding with...
Yeah, I try to make it to make sure the time to get it kept in there.
We won't say... You know, we want to pick up this to cover that and give us that option.
Yeah. And then March also gives them a little time, if you guys don't approve something, to go back and be able to identify, you know, an alternative.
Dr. Barnes, I was just going to say, I think you put turf over that pothole and you keep playing, we're good. We got to get back to normal.
On the participation numbers, I know we mentioned it a while back, but I'm not sure if you were. You're tracking the socioeconomics on the students that are in the participation?
With the extracurricular kids. Yeah, so they'll be doing, Lloyd is working with the counselors now to get set up for the course selection process. And once we get that information, that data back, we'll be able to break that down and give you some ideas on how many kids participate and what groups of kids participate and so on and so forth.
Thank you.
Dr. Ross, just a quick question. You said that you go and visit with the principal of a strong classroom and one that's not so strong. How do you determine what a weak classroom is? Is it discipline? Is it test scores? Is it what?
And this is the principal's perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've done it once at Peach Creek. We missed our we had to go virtual with the last one. But we'll be doing it at Timberlake's on Friday.
I don't know where you're
going to
find a weak one.
Uh-oh. He says, yes. So just as a principal perspective, it's not necessarily a weak teacher, but let's say you have, we have a really strong teacher, so that's great for us. And for other principals to see it, too, right, to kind of see and we kind of make judgment with each other. But to look at a teacher who may be struggling in some area and getting another set of eyes on it. So, you know, when we work in on the campus, we're constantly seeing that person all the time as a person that we are familiar with. And maybe someone else coming in, especially having some experienced principals like we do, to come in and give their perspective on what they see in that person. And what we do is once we do that and we come back in, the goal is to share how would you assist that person, you know, with some things you can do. So then that principal gets some other perspectives from other principals on how they could possibly assist that teacher.
I guess I can see it on an elementary campus, but on a high school campus, that's going to be a little harder to do because there's so many, and,
we don't pick those two, And it's a little more difficult, like for us as a secondary people, when we go into the elementaries, you know, you kind of get, they train us on what to look for, and then we'll probably do some of the vice versa as they kind of get to the high school.
Yeah, and look, I guess the student discipline issues and things like that. I mean, that's
a key part of it. Classroom management, that's what you want to look at.
That's
kind of the goal, so that every time we meet, at least once a month maybe, we can go to those different classrooms together as a Because a lot of times you get the instructional specialists look at them, maybe your APs look at them, but very rarely does a principal ever have other principals come in and look at their how their classrooms are functioning. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great opportunity for us to kind of grow together in what we're seeing. And hopefully at the end we'll have a good alignment on, you know, what does a quality instructor look like in Splendor ISD from those principals, and we can kind of work toward those goals.
Thanks.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Glasses back on. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So next I have, unless there's anything else, 100%. I think Dr. Burke set me up here, consent agenda items. Oh, yeah, consent agenda items.
Yes.
Well, I thought, yep. I feel like I'm missing something. All right, so next we have consent agenda items, minutes, financials, tax report, investment reports, accounts payable, consider approval of TASB policy update 116, and the approval of, or consider approval of Splendor ISD Education Foundation teacher grants. So anyone have any questions or anything they want to pull out? All right.
I'll make a motion to approve the December 3rd special meeting minutes, December 14th regular meeting minutes, the financials, tax reports, investment collection reports, and accounts payable in the general operating fund, a total amount of $841,129.75, the TASB policy update 116, the Splendor ISD Education Foundation grant checks as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion made by Adam Dietrich and seconded by Jackie Knott to approve the December 3rd special meeting minutes, December 14th regular meeting minutes, financials, tax reports, investment, collection reports, and accounts payable in the general operating account in total amount of $841,129.75, TASB policy update, and the Splendora ISD Education Foundation grant checks as presented. All those voting in favor, raise your right hand. All right, motion carries 7-0. All right, further action items, we have consider the student fees policy FP local update. So that's in the board book. Are there any questions or further discussion on it? Jackie, was that a
yeah,
like a wait?
Just, yes, can I have 10
okay.
seconds?
Okay.
Can you pull it up?
What? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Policy.
Oh, the student fees? Okay.
It's on page 465.
Thank you.
Yeah, and looking at that, guys, on the proposed policy, there's just a little typo. It says student fees will be approved annually by the RFC school board during the February board meeting. It should read March.
Oh, is it March or is it?
No,
because we're voting on it in March.
Oh, I gotcha. Thank you.
And while Katie's pulling that up, we neglected to have, is she on there, Dr. Ryder?
Yes.
Okay, can she just, I'm sorry to go back out of order, Suzanne, is it okay?
No, that's fine.
Update on the grants.
Education Foundation grants, real quick.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, Sheila.
You thought you were.
Stand up, Sheila.
Kevin.
All right. So the Splendor Education Foundation would like to present the board with a check of $2,951.28. As you can all relate, last year we did not get the opportunity to do our two main fundraisers, our golf tournament and our mended books. With that in mind, we limited the amount of each individual team grant to a maximum of $1,000 this year. So during our review process, many of the grants were above the $1,000 max. It was stated in the rules and stuff like that. But unfortunately, they went overboard on their amounts. And so out of the 15 grants received, we are awarding three of them. And as in the past, we had members of the community and even our own Alan Wells and Suzanne Soto help us out with grading and helping us out with the grants that met the criteria. So other than that, we'd like to just thank y'all for your time and the passion that y'all have for the school district. And with it being Board Appreciation Month, we certainly appreciate what y'all do for us.
Sheila, can I just, I just wanted to make a statement. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, y'all. And just... last year or 2 years ago, Ann Metoyer came and spoke with us about the RB TELUS Award and so forth. and Ann passed away not so long ago, and Ann was very, her estate was very gracious to give a donation of $1,500 to the Education Foundation. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. It was very kind of her son to want to do that, to come back and to give back to this community. Ann hasn't lived here in years.
Yes,
I mean,
and
even,
I got to learn some of the history about the high school area.
Yeah, like yeah. Really where the high school is, was that was her family land, and they were would only sell for the high school to be built there. And so, and like I said, Ann hasn't lived in this area. She lived in Cleveland for a while, but her heart was Splendora. And so just wanted to acknowledge it and thank her family, you know, publicly
you,
for that.
For sharing that.
Yes.
Thank you, and thank all the members that help and contribute to the organization that makes it possible. So thank you for your service, too.
Thank you, and hopefully we get to do more this next year. We do have a golf tournament coming up in May, so...
I am so sorry that y'all did have to cancel the menu cook, but y'all saved a lot of people from losing to banana pudding.
Are you sure you can pull that off again? Your source may not be with
us. Coles is closed down now.
Thank you very much.
The empanada is nice. Sesame, you're sitting around two top champs right here. So.
I missed that.
Don't get
mad. All right. All right, so we're back to anything else? Oh, Dr. Burke? We're back to the, the student fees.
Actually, no,
I'm
going to
skip that again. We need a motion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, didn't we?
No, we haven't voted on that. So you had a question.
Yes,
you were
right.
Looking
yes,
back
right,
on your question,
right,
and
right,
we were waiting
right,
for
right,
you to
right,
ask your
right.
question.
I didn't have a question. I wanted to look at it real quick. I wanted to know what was specific, because I know we spoke about it last meeting. So, okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the student fee policy FB local update. As presented with the addendum or the change of February to March.
Second.
All right, we have a motion made by Dan Muirhead and seconded by Alan Wells to approve the student fees policy update with the change of voting in March versus February. All those voting in favor, raise your right hand. Oh, is that your hand? No? Okay. So we have 6-4, and any against?
Abstain.
So what is it? I'm sorry. Can
6 and 1 abstention. Okay, motion passes. All right, so we have consideration of approval of House Bill 3 goals. Any questions on that? I'm looking over at you, Jackie.
No questions.
No questions. All right.
Thanks, Susan.
Do we have a motion to approve the House Bill 3 goals?
Make a motion to approve the HB 3 goals as presented.
All right. And I'll second. We have a motion by Alan Wells, seconded by Suzanne Soto, to approve the House Bill 3 goals as presented. All those voting in favor, raise your right hand. Okay. We have motion carries, voting 7-4, 0 against. And thank you, Dr. Hoisingham, for that. Was that you who did that was quite detailed?
The for the CCMR stuff?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That was, yeah, some good links to that, too. So will you be presenting that, like, every so often, that updates the data and things like that?
Yes,
okay.
I will.
All right. Great. All right. Next item C, we have consider purchase 2 78-passenger school buses. Darkus is here, right? Anyone have any questions about that?
I'm just clarifying, this is to add to the fleet. We're not replacing any, right?
Yeah. I thought that was amazing. Yes, we're adding.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. That's
and
good.
It will
They're
take us
down.
To a total of 51? Is that what it is? It will take
it will
us to that.
50. We don't count the activity buses as our yellow bus fleet. We count it as white fleet.
Okay.
I'd like the motion to approve the purchase of 2 78-passenger school buses.
I'll second.
Okay. Can I go with Jason?
Go with Jason.
Okay.
I heard Jason.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way Jason's louder than I am, but that's okay.
All right. We have the motion made by Dan Muirhead and seconded by Jason Sessom to approve the purchase of the 278-passenger school buses. All those voting in favor, raise your right hand. All right. The motion carries 7-0. All right. Next is superintendent's report. Information. Did you have anything to add to that, Dr. Burke?
Just a brief update. I mean, you guys can see the enrollment update there. We know we're growing. You can see all the there are lots of good things continue to happen. Just want to commend our staff, principals, leadership, and teachers for just continuing to deal with the COVID piece because it is super challenging. I know we got to quarantine another class at one of our campuses, and it just continues to, it has not gone away. I'm really improving with that, but everyone has done a magnificent job communicating, working together. I told our cabinet earlier this week that I can see a lot of evidence of our processes starting to be more refined, that we're communicating better across departments and from district office to central to campuses, and so I'm pleased with the direction we're going, even though we've been faced with this and tasked with this in this situation. So just a quick, if you'll notice on some of the pictures, I don't know what Katie's pulled up there, you'll see that like there's one hashtag that says Noble Action Alert. So I want to give the board a quick update on where we are with our accountability piece, which I think will also factor into some of our bond work. Our campuses have been meeting with their campus design teams last month and this month, and we'll be coming together in March to kind of re-engage with our signaling piece, and so we're hoping to bring a signaling chart to the board in May, and so we have not given up on that. We just had to kind of take a pause because of a major crisis, and that's one of the things that the signaling chart does point out, that when there's a major crisis, you have to pivot, and we had to do that with the pandemic, and so we are getting back to that business of community-based accountability. So I'm pleased with that. I'm pleased with the work in our teaching and learning department. They're working very hard. Kathy, you had mentioned the remote learning. That has been a challenge, I think, for all of us. We fully intend to move forward with some sort of blended learning because it is one of our goals. And I think we learned a lot from this past 6 or 7 months where we have capacity gaps, where we have technology gaps, and we're working hard to address those. And so I think as we move forward, we still want to provide that choice because there are kids that are succeeding and being successful in that environment. And so we want to continue that. We want to do that efficiently and make sure that we have the resources and the capacity to make sure that it happens. So lots of good things to come. It's going to be a busy year, no matter if we decide to call it behind in November or May. I think the process needs to start in earnest anyway. And so that's all I have on my report. I did ask Suzanne to for us to go into closed session for my evaluation piece. So that's all I have. If you have any questions, I'll take those now.
Okay. Are you going to carry him in there?
I'm going to go and set up another
one. All right. Thank you, sir. Okay, so that brings us to closed session. Did you want to talk about the, well, no, that's next. I was going to say the board reporting has changed a little bit, how you're reporting to us. Did you want to talk about that now or just kind of as part of
the whole? No, we can do that in there. It's all tied in.
Okay, got it. All right, so closed session. The Board of Trustees will now go into a closed session. The closed session will be held for purposes authorized by the Texas Open Meetings Act, Texas Government Code for Personnel Matters, Section 551.074, concerning any and all purposes permitted by the Acts. No voting will take place in a closed meeting. Any action the Board wishes to take as part of discussions in closed session will take place after the Board reconvenes in the open meeting. It is now
8:07
p.m. All right, personnel session. Thank you.
All the rest of you folks are